Welcome to Agape Ministries Podcasts, a whole new way of thinking. Episode 193, part one of a talk given by Chris Thomas, entitled Holy and Human.
Strange experience to speak in this place because you're sort of dazzled, really. You can't see too much at the back, which is maybe a good thing, but also a sense of being held in a collection, a group of men is quite an extraordinary experience and quite a humbling experience. I remember the first time I spoke here, you know, I found it really hard to put into words the emotional reality that was going on within me. And I'm quite sure that in the small groups, in the experiences you've had over the weekend, that there might have been something of that going on within you. Not able really to put into words exactly what it is that's happening, but knowing that something is. And that it is an emotional reality that you're held in. And in many senses, it's a healing place. You know, I know for myself, both here and the conference up in the north, have been healing places as I have looked at my own relationship, for example, with my dad, which was rocky to say the least. And just being amongst a group of men has brought healing and peace in that whole area. So part of me wants to say this morning, thank you. You know, just thank you for having the courage to come, to be yourself, and somehow in being yourself, holding this group together and experiencing powerfully the presence of God through one another and in one another. I don't know why I said all that, but anyway. I love stories, as many of you will know, and the reason I love them is because in many senses what they do is enable us to get in touch with ourselves in a non-threatening way. They enable us to get in touch with ourselves and to hear the call of the Lord to enter into the process of transformation. Jesus told lots of stories. And I guess the reason Jesus did that was because he too was into transformation. He wasn't over keen on getting people into the synagogue, but he was keen on transformation. He wanted people to enter into the mystery that is God and somehow experience the freedom and the life that comes from entering into that mystery. This is a great story I came across recently. An old grandfather whose grandson came to him with anger at a schoolmate who had done him an injustice said, "Let me tell you a story. I too at times have felt a great hate for those that have taken so much, with no sorrow for what they do. But hate wears you down and doesn't hurt your enemy. It's like taking poison and wishing your enemy would die. I've struggled with these feelings many times." He continued, "It's as if there are two wolves inside me. One is good and does no harm. He lives in harmony with all around him and doesn't take offense. He's perfectly at peace, perfectly happy, secure in himself, and doesn't need to be built up by others. But the other wolf, he's full of anger. The littlest thing will set him into a fit of temper. He fights everyone all the time for no reason. He can't think because his anger and hate are so great. He's insecure and frightened and doesn't really know who he is, so he lashes out. It's hard to live with these two wolves inside me, for both of them try to dominate my spirit." The boy looked intently into his grandfather's eye and asked, "Which one wins, grandfather?" The grandfather looked at him and smiled and then said solemnly, "The one I feed." "So which wolf do you feed?" I often think that the spiritual life is a journey in which we begin to understand the battle that goes on in here. I don't think it's necessarily a battle between good and evil, but a battle between the true self and the false self. If you look at the writings of St. Paul, you'll find that Paul often talks about the flesh and the spirit. And most of us, when we read that, think that, you know, spirit is good and flesh is bad. We think that spirit has to do with God and flesh has got to do with this body that we carry ourselves around in. A few years ago, I was listening to a tape, and on it the speaker said, it might have been a CD, or it might have been a tape, anyway. But on it the speaker said that Paul doesn't mean that at all. He said that the words that Paul uses actually speak of two different realities. He said that the word Paul uses for flesh is sarx, and the word he uses for body is soma. And so he obviously is talking about two different things. And the author of the tape went on to say, you know, that flesh doesn't necessarily mean body. I decided I'd have to look into this. I found it quite interesting, and I wanted to know really what this was about. So I went to one of the great Pauline scholars, F.F. Bruce, who wrote an incredible book called Paul, Free Apostle in the Spirit. And in it I found that he said exactly the same thing. What the word flesh means in Paul's understanding is in fact false self. And the false self is the independent I. It's the one who wants to stay in control. The self that sees my desires and my wants and my needs as being of primary importance. It's motivated by the things of this world. It needs material wealth. It needs respect. It needs power. In a sense, it's the second wolf in the story that we began with. That false self is innately fragile. It's needy. It's always anxious. It's characterized by anger, by frustration, by aggression. It blames rather than accepts. And it's always looking outside itself for the answers. Now, Paul is very hard on the flesh, on the false self, because most people are trapped there. You know, we're trapped in this minuscule little self that needs so much affirmation, so much attention. Now, the word spirit can be translated as true self. It's who you really are in God. I was interested when Greg began this morning and he was talking about beloved son. You know, turn to one another and welcome beloved sons. That's our true self in God. That's who we really are. It's when we begin to realize that we're not the center of the universe, but that somehow God is. That life isn't dependent on whether other people like us or don't like us, or whether yesterday was a success or a failure, but on the goodness and the grace of God. It's when we know that we are beloved sons, not because we deserve it. I think John said that very clearly last night. Not because we deserve it, not because we're worthy of it, but because of God. Because of the goodness of God. This true self, who we really are in God, is characterized by an overwhelming sense of goodness. You know, God is good. The world is gift. Every moment is worth living. A good life isn't judged on whether others like us or not, or whether yesterday was a success or a failure. but simply because God is good. I think that when we begin to experience this true self, we start to laugh more. There's been a lot of laughter this weekend. Isn't it interesting that in a place like this, we can be our true selves? We start to laugh more. We start to cry more, and I would guess at times there have been some tears. We start to trust more. There's a vulnerability and a strength within us. There's also an ease about us, you know. When we live in the true self, we're comfortable in our own skins. We know who we are in God. We don't have to be right. We don't have to play the power games. We really can live in this world believing it to be gift. We can rejoice in the moment. If you want a good test about whether you're living in the true self or the false self, you know, if you spend most of your time living worrying about the future or the past, then you can guarantee you're not living in the true self. Now, one of the things I'm beginning to discover is that very sadly, most of us seem to live out of this false self most of the time. And the spiritual journey is about moving from one to another. It's about moving into the true self, which is this place of vulnerability, where we're not in control, where we don't have all the answers. It's a place where life is about journeying and risking and trusting. It's a place where life is about letting go. It's a place where life is about really living, not just existing at that sort of superficial, shallow level that so many of us can live at. But you know, the false self, the small self, whatever you want to call it, is so strong that we don't want to go there. You know, we're dragged shrieking and screaming all the time. We're so conditioned to letting the small self reign within us. I guess it's only the power of God that can enable us to move. It's only the power of God that can tell us who we really are. This is a great story. It's about a businessman and a fisherman. And it sort of illustrates the point, I think. A fisherman once sat in the midday sun, gazing out to sea, watching his little fishing boat riding at anchor, and thinking to himself how good it was to sit in the sun with no worries, watch the waves breaking, and enjoy God's creation. But his daydream was interrupted when a smartly dressed and rather overweight businessman came up to him and broke into his reverie with a sharp question. "What are you doing lazing about at midday? Why aren't you out fishing?" Somewhat taken aback, the fisherman replied, "I've done my day's fishing. I've taken my fish to market, and now I'm relaxing in the sun. I'm just enjoying being here." "Well, why don't you put out to sea again and catch some more fish?" his questioner insisted. "Why would I want to do that?" said the fisherman politely. "Well, then you'd make twice as much money." "Why would I want to do that?" "Well, then you could buy a bigger, better boat and catch even more fish. You could even employ other people to do the fishing. My word, you could own a whole fleet of fishing boats if you weren't so lazy." "Why would I want to do that?" "Well, if you owned your own fleet of boats and employed other people to do the fishing, you'd have as much money as you could ever dream of." "Why would I want that?" "Well, then you could spend the rest of your life just doing whatever you wanted to, sitting in the sun, relaxing, enjoying yourself with no worries." I don't know that we ever live in the true self completely. You know, I think we can probably slip from one to another quite easily. And that's why it's a journey. You know, it's one step forward, two step backwards. But I think the holiness that we're all called to lies in the movement from one to another, until we eventually come face to face with God, and the small self finally fades into insignificance, and we realize in the depth of our being who we really are in God. We realize that we are lovable, that we are of value, that we do have worth, that we do have dignity. When we realize that we're not great and good because of who we are, but because of who God is. So which wolf do you feed? Is it the egocentric little me that has to be at the center of the universe and which shouts and screams for attention constantly? Or is it the me that says God is good? The moment is all I have. I don't need to be in control because I know I'm loved, I'm of value, I'm of worth. Is it the me that knows God has given me my true identity? I think the whole process of letting go is one way in which we feed this true self and enable the smaller self to lose power. So what is it we have to let go of? I guess in many senses, you know, we have to let go of some of the images of God that we've been fed and somehow open ourselves to dare to believe in the overwhelming love of God. A love of God which, as we've already said last night, first thing this morning, you know, we can't earn it. We can't deserve it. It's simply given. Now I know, you know, that we live in a world system that tells us nothing is freely given. Nothing is freely given. Everything has its price. And yet what the scriptures tell us is that that's not true of God. God is other. And as much as it goes against the grain, God freely gives God's self. We don't have to earn it. We don't have to deserve it. We don't have to be the best Christian in the world. God simply loves. Just hear that again. There is nothing you can do. There is nothing I can do that can make God love us more. Absolutely nothing. So whatever images you've been fed about God, whatever images you've created for yourselves that would tell you that somehow it is about what you do, somehow we have to have the courage to let them go. Somehow we have to have the courage to let them go and dare to believe in the power of love. Philip Yancey, in his fantastic book, What's So Amazing About Grace, said this: there is nothing we can do to make God love us more. There is nothing we can do to make God love us less. That's the essence of the good news. I sometimes think, you know, that our religious systems can be a means by which we build up the false self rather than the true self. You know, as we allow ourselves to be proud of what we do for God, or as we try to earn our salvation by the number of masses that we go to, or the moral code we live by, or by making sure we're doctrinally correct. It's just a way of building up the small self. And when you think about it, really, you know, it's pathetic. How can we even begin to imagine that there's anything we can do for God? How can we begin to imagine that? The one who lives in the true self knows that in fact it's all about God. And it's all about what God does for us. It's all about what God does in us. And it's all about what God does through us. And there's nothing you can do to get more of God's love. I told you I love stories. This is another story about freely given love. And it maybe illustrates something of the heart of God. "Can I see my baby?" the happy new mother asked. When the bundle was nestled in her arms, she moved the fold of cloth to look upon his tiny face. She gasped. The doctor turned quickly and looked out of the tall hospital window. The baby had been born without ears. Time proved that the baby's hearing was perfect. It was only his appearance that was marred. When he rushed home from school one day and flung himself into his mother's arms, she sighed, knowing that his life was to be a succession of heartbreaks. He blurted out the tragedy. "A boy, a big boy, called me a freak." He grew up, handsome for his misfortune, a favorite with his fellow students. He might have been class president but for that. He developed a gift, a talent for literature and music. The boy's father had a session with the family doctor. Could nothing be done for him? Well, I believe I could graft on a pair of outer ears if they could be got, the doctor said. And so the search began for a person who would make such a sacrifice for a young man. 2 years went by. Then, you're going to the hospital, son. Mother and I have someone who will donate the ears you need, but it's a secret, said the father. The operation was a brilliant success, and a new person emerged. His talents blossomed into genius, and school and college became a series of triumphs. Later, he married and entered the diplomatic service. But I must know, he urged his father, who gave so much for me? I could never do enough for him. I don't believe you could, said the father. But the agreement was that you're not to know, not yet. The years kept their profound secret, but the day did come, one of the darkest days that ever passed through a son. He stood with his father over his mother's casket. Slowly, tenderly, the father stretched forth a hand and raised the thick, reddish-brown hair to reveal that the mother had no outer ears. Your mum said she was glad she never let her hair be cut, he whispered gently. And nobody ever thought your mother less beautiful, did they? Freely given love. Let go of those assumptions about God that would stop you knowing the truth that you are beloved in the sight of God.
So thank you for taking the time to listen to these episodes. Our prayer is that as you listen and reflect on these teachings, that you'll be encouraged to continue your journey to maximize your potential to have a good and a happy life. So sign in again next week for more teaching on how you can follow the Jesus way to experience your life as filled with meaning, purpose, and joy. So God bless and stay safe.